The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, Disavowed Turtles, a deck of Buffys, Captain Worf and XO Spock, plus all the Star Wars that is wars in the stars. All systems are go. Are you sure? Control is not convinced, but the computer has the evidence. No need to abort. The Major Spoilers podcast is on the air. 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to issue 1022 of the Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out this week. There is no Rodrigo this week, and I think it's because he's a Star Trek fan and not a Star Wars fan.
That's what
and
it is.
We're like, going to be talking all about the Star Wars in this first segment. I don't know, Matthew, if you had a chance to check out all the news coming from Star Wars Celebration London this past weekend, but there was a lot of it.
Actually, I did. My wife was apparently watching this and kept going, hey, look at this thing. Look at what's this stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. So here's what we know. There's a lot of stuff that's going on. The first thing is, let's start in the movie universe. I find very ironic that people are excited about the news of 3 Star Wars movies, considering just 2 or 3 weeks ago, we were talking about how 2 Star Wars movies, the Kevin Feige movie and the Patty Jenkins Rogue Squadron movies, had been shelved, and the Taika Waititi movie had been kind of put on hold or is still in limbo. And everyone's like, oh, well, I guess this is the end of Star Wars. And then people come out and said, yes, just like we told you that there was going to be a Rogue Squadron movie, there's going to be 3 new Star Wars movies. And everyone is just like, oh, this is the greatest thing in the world. Hey, listen, they've got people lined up. They've got some good minds behind this stuff. But until you see that first trailer, or until you sit down in the movie theater to watch it, all these things could change in an instant. So here's what we know about the 3 movies. The first one that we know about is going to be directed by Dave Filoni. He is kind of the big head in charge of all Star Wars right now, as far as the creative side, him and Tony Stark's best friend.
Happy Hogan.
Yeah, Happy Hogan.
Yes.
John Favreau, right?
Bang. Yeah, him.
Yeah, John Favreau. So here's what we know about Dave Filoni. Dave Filoni is the one that's in charge of all the television stuff. He's the one that is behind the Book of Boba Fett and The Mandalorian and Ahsoka, and also the Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels, all of that stuff. That's Dave Filoni's work. His movie is going to kind of wrap up all of the threads from the Book of Boba Fett, The Mandalorian, and the upcoming Ahsoka television show. And so I don't know how many more seasons of Mandalorian or Ahsoka we're going to get. This could be a movie that is the 3rd in the series. So this could be like 2030 by the time his movie comes out. So that's the Dave Filoni movie. Then we have James Mangold, who everybody knows from Old Man Logan or the Logan movie, right? Also some other really cool stuff that he has done. He is going to be looking at the rise of the Jedi Order. Okay. The dawn of the Jedi. Where does the Force come from? Where did he, so he's kind of approaching it in one of the quotes that I saw talking about it, is this is Ben-Hur meets the 10 Commandments as far as Star Wars goes. So the religious illusions are not going to die off in this in this hokey religions nonsense here. So that will be very interesting. The 3rd movie, and this is the one that everybody flipped out about, is the return of Rey, quote unquote, Skywalker. Daisy Ridley is coming back for another movie in the main Star Wars franchise. This movie will focus on her 10 to 15 years after the end of the Last Jedi movie, where she is starting to rebuild the Jedi Order. Hopefully doing it a lot better than Luke Skywalker did.
Well, I mean, how could it go worst?
I mean, we are. Well, unless she has Ben Kenobi or a Ben Scott or a, what is there? Ben Solo's baby, and screws him up at 15 years old. Maybe it can't go anywhere.
It's possible. It is possible.
It totally is.
They were
totally
very close in that last film.
Yeah.
Did he die? I can't remember.
No, no, I don't think he did. I can't remember. All I remember is him and Uncle Ghost fighting on the plains of the Salt Flats. And I don't think he died. Yeah, I think.
Was that the last movie or was that the second movie?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't even remember.
Yeah, that tells you how good that last movie was.
Oh, stop it.
Well, let's just say that Rian Johnson's project, the one that they were like, oh, we'd love to get Rian Johnson to come back and do Star Wars because, hey, I liked Rian Johnson's Star Wars movie. I thought it was the best of all the three new trilogy movies. I wanted to see more of Rian Johnson's take in the Star Wars universe. Kathleen Kennedy did come out and say that we've been in contact with Rian and with his Poker Face television series and his Glass Onion franchise that he's got going on with Netflix. He's a little bit too busy for us to make any announcements right now, which is a polite way of saying that there's nothing on the foreseeable future.
Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah. What do you think about any of these movie news talk things?
I really do want to see more Rey, partly because I felt like the Rey character was ill-served by the third part of the trilogy, but also because it will make all the wrong people really, really mad. I want the people who are mad about Rey to just continue being mad and going grrr and just impotently screaming into a void. I'm also kind of psyched for Filoni to do what Filoni wants to do.
I'm really worried. I really like his stuff.
You know, I have to admit, I even liked the Book of Boba Fett, which a lot of people, including you, are down on. But my main thing
is the main problem with the Book of Boba Fett, no
more Mandalorian.
Well, no, I think Mandalorian is probably going to end at the end of season three.
Okay.
I don't think, you know, like I said, this is something that I think is going to be far enough out because they haven't even gotten Ahsoka launched yet. And they're already saying, hey, the threads from Ahsoka are going to be talked about in this movie. So unless they're only doing one season of Ahsoka, I think they're going to try to do two or three seasons of Mandalorian, Ahsoka, and whatever else that they have up their sleeves in order to build up to something that makes you want to go to the theater to watch this.
Right.
Yeah. So that is, that's going on in the movie universe. On the Disney Plus side, we did get our first trailer for Ahsoka, and Rosario Dawson looks great again as, Ahsoka, coming back and swinging her lightsaber blades. We are also seeing, and this is the thing that I'm a little, I haven't made up my mind on this yet, but there is a certain character from the animated series in Star Wars Rebels, where Ahsoka was doing her thing, that I was very excited about when it showed up in that television show, not knowing how I feel about it now with the actor. And the actor I'm trying to, he's Lars Mikkelsen is, he's one of the Mikkelsens, you know, he's throw a rock and you're going to hit a Mikkelsen. It seems like. He is going to
like the Hemsworths and everything now.
He is going to reprise his role as Grand Admiral Thrawn in the live action television series. He did the voice acting for Thrawn in the television in the animated show. The only problem that I have right now is unless they threw us for a loop or something, Mikkelsen isn't blue. Nor does he have red eyes. And ever since he was introduced in the television series and even in the books, in the Thrawn trilogy, he has been blue skinned and red eyes. And so I'm not sure how I feel about that. What do you think?
Has he appeared in character? I mean,
Admiral Thrawn has appeared as, you know, as himself Thrawn. in the Rebels television show.
Okay. Like, as blue cartoon
as a cartoon blue guy voiced by Lars Mikkelsen in the television show. What? Lars Mikkelsen is Thrawn, but he's not blue and he doesn't have red eyes.
What television show?
The upcoming Ahsoka television show, the one that we're talking about.
I did not realize that they had revealed that was happening.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's why I'm saying if in the trailer you can see Lars Mikkelsen standing there with a lightsaber and he's a white guy. And then everyone's like,
maybe
that's Admiral Thrawn. Well, and that's what I'm wondering, if they're going to go back and tweak something, because I kind of, even though I don't like Thrawn, I know this is heresy to all you Star Wars fans out there. I didn't care for the first book in the Thrawn trilogy. I thought it was, you know, kind of hacky, and I didn't care for it. I didn't want to continue reading the rest of the Thrawn trilogy. And so I walked away from it. I don't think that Thrawn in those books is very interesting. I really liked how they portrayed Thrawn in the Rebels television show. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very interested to see what they do with Thrawn in the Ahsoka television series. But he's not blue, so I don't know how I feel about that. Or if it's just one of those things that's like, ah, come on, it doesn't really matter. Hey, it doesn't matter. You put Rosario Dawson in this makeup to make her look like the cartoon character. Why can't they do that to Mikkelsen?
Well, I still don't think that they can't. I mean,
they might. They might. I mean, we still have a while to go before this TV series drops, so a lot can happen. But the bit that they showed in the trailer seemed pretty definite. The other big actor that is returning to the Ahsoka television series is David Tennant, who played a robot. He voiced a robot called Huang. And so we will get to see that character as well. And for people wondering what was the fate of Ezra Bridger, well, he's listed as one episode in the television show. So be on the lookout for him. I'm kind of excited about that, because that was kind of the thing at the end of Rebels, where Bridger kind of disappeared and Ahsoka's like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to find him. And so maybe this is the part of her quest,
this
going
is
and
what
seeking.
Happened, yeah. 20 years later, she found him.
Yeah. I was really invested in the Rebels. When that first came out, I was not as invested as in the Rebels as I thought I was going to be, because I thought it was going to be very much a kid show. And the animation style was very much different from Clone Wars.
Right.
But then after the first season, something clicked and it kind of moved away from being kiddie humorous stuff and started getting more into the lore and into the greater story of what was going on. And that's when I was just like, oh yeah, this is really, really good. So yeah. Cool. Yeah. So be on the lookout for that later this year, I think, is when we get to see Ahsoka Tano redo her thing. Did you watch the trailer for that by chance?
Yes. And that I'm like, yay.
Cool.
I do want to see that, just because I just love
Rosario Dawson. Yeah.
Everything with Rosario Dawson, it's fine. We're good. Let's have more Rosario Dawson everywhere.
So the one thing that didn't appear in the movie news was, what about the High Republic, this big publishing event that crossed over between traditional prose books, comic books, podcasts, all of the stuff that was going on through 2019 to 2022 and still going on, because both the Dark Horse and Marvel have High Republic series. Well, we are getting a High Republic television show in the form of The Acolyte. The first four episodes of that have already been shot and are complete. And so we will see that coming up very soon. It's set 100 years before the events of A New Hope, and it is being pitched as Frozen meets Kill Bill.
What?
Yeah. So I'm very excited to see how that comes out.
I don't want to see that.
I mean, I kind of do. I mean, and I don't know how they're approaching this. So one of the things that has been flipped back and forth in a couple of the shows that we have seen on Disney Plus coming out of the Star Wars universe is the use of the volume, right? This big LED space. The Mandalorian has been shot a lot on the volume. That's how they're able to go and do all these really cool special effects stuff without having spending a lot of time in post-production. But everything people have started to notice kind of looks a little flat in some instances and is not as versatile as everyone is making it out to be. When we got to Andor was shot on location with big sets, and even Book of Boba Fett, I think bits of it were, you know, real sets were being built for the city and everything. I am very interested to see which way they approach The Acolyte. If they're like, yep, we're back into the volume, or if they're like, nope, we are going and making this as gritty and as dirty as Andor is. So there we go.
I haven't watched Andor because I feel like it's not really a conjunction junction without but.
I think you would. So Andor, did you like Rogue One?
I liked parts of Rogue One.
What parts did you like?
I liked the samurai,
where everybody died,
the gun and the explosion.
You didn't watch Rogue One.
I did too watch Rogue One. It had a samurai in it. His name was Samurai Guy, and he was like, "I am the Force. The Force is with me." Yeah, and they went through the whole thing, and the girl who looked just like Daisy was trying to save the plans, and then they had to uplink them, and then at the very end, they had robot glow in the dark CGI Carrie. And it was just like, oh, that's disturbing.
Then
it had that really cool Darth Vader kills everything scene.
I think you should check out Andor. It is really good. It is grim and gritty. It is a story that builds to the point where you hit the final episode and you can see the spark of rebellion in the everyday citizenry, where there is a character that basically at the end of the series is, "I'm mad as hell. We're not going to take this anymore. Burn this mother effort to the ground." And you can tell that, oh, wow, this is really where, you know, this is before the Rebel Alliance is formed. You've got all these rebel pockets doing their own thing. And you can really see this is the spark of rebellion in this show. And in season two, the first one takes place over the course of a year. So there's, I think there's 12 episodes. And so those 12 episodes take place over a year. The next season, which I'm a little disappointed, it sounds like we're only going to get two seasons of Andor. The next season is going to take place over 4 years, and it's going to end with the lead up to Rogue One.
Okay.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, eventually it would. And surprise for everybody who's like really into Cash and Andor, he dies.
In Rogue One.
Yeah, in Rogue One. So be aware of that.
Doesn't he die at the end when they're like doing their Death Star?
They're hugging each other and the planet blows up. Yeah. The Death Star. Yeah. Yep, I've seen
that movie.
Yep. Yep.
It's got that samurai guy in it.
Uh-huh.
It's got the guy with the gun.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the walkers come out and they're walking. They're like, "Hey, we are walkers."
It's got Walsh in it. Yeah.
Joe Walsh. Yeah. I love Joe Walsh.
Anything else you want to talk about Star Wars stuff, Matthew?
Well, no, because you're poo-pooing me when I talk about Star Wars stuff. With the samurai.
I'm not poo-pooing you. I'm just saying it's a little bit more than a samurai and a robot.
He's a samurai. He's got that mean robot.
Anyway, anything else?
Like, robot.
Anything else that you got out of Star Wars?
Can't think of anything, no.
All right. Well, there you go, listeners. What did you think of all the Star Wars news? Star Wars Celebration returns to Anaheim next year. And then in 2025, Star Wars Celebration returns to Tokyo. So everybody's excited about that. You can share your thoughts over on our Discord server. You can join the Major Spoilers Discord server absolutely free. And we would love to see your smiling avatar when you sign up and join us. And all the cat gifts and the other cool things are awaiting your arrival. All right, let us get into some reviews. I've got a very different review for you this week. I was sent by Inside Editions the Buffy the Vampire Slayer tarot deck. Say what you will about the tarot deck. You can use it for, you know, if you think it's divination, great. If you're using it as a fun party game, great. If you're using it for witchy stuff, great. If you're using it for your own personal guidance and insight, great. But I was instantly attracted by this because of the Buffy the Vampire Slayer theme that runs through the deck. It's written by Gilly with art by Carl Jamins Mountfort. And this is a very traditional tarot deck. It's got your cups and your saucers and your cards and your balls and all that. It's even got a tower deck or a tower card, which I like a lot because, and I'll talk about another tarot deck here in just a moment. It actually portrays the tower as it is supposed to be, kind of this spooky, ominous moment of change. But the other thing that's really cool about the art that Mountfort does is it features all of the characters from the Buffy the Vampire Slayer television series. So if you're wanting to see what's her name, the one that that's the witch that becomes real and she runs the magic shop. What is her name? I forget. But if you're Anya, that's right. I knew it started with an A. She's got a card. She is the judgment card. If you are trying to see where under Scythes, you get to see, you know, Werewolf Boy in there. You get to see Giles as somebody. You get to see Angel as Justice in this bit. And so a lot of, so of course the magician is, not Amber, but the other girl, Willow. So you get to see everybody play a role or two in this. And I find it fascinating. Sometimes they play more than one character. For example, Charisma Carpenter's character is featured in the Chariot one because she drives a fast car. Buffy obviously is the Emperor, those kinds of things. Very well done. It's a very stylized, I want to say flat art, meaning there's a lot of, not a lot of shading on the characters or anything. So it has a very, I don't know how to describe it. It's just very flat and uses very vibrant colors, purples, yellows, reds. Yeah, those are your primary colors that you're going to find on these decks. And so that's nice. And so I like the set from that. And of course, it is a, you know, traditional tarot card size. If you're someone that likes to collect decks of cards, you know, this is bigger than that. But the roots of cards, decks of cards, playing cards that you play or poker cards that you use has their root in the tarot, which I also find very fascinating. The box that this comes in is super nice. And it also includes a Buffy the Vampire Slayer tarot deck guidebook that talks about each of the cards and what your meanings are, whether the card is upright or reversed, and also gives you some layouts if you want to do some tarot readings. I think it includes like five or six layouts that you can use for that. Or if you want to just do a single card draw, you can do that as well. I previously reviewed a tarot deck on Finally Friday with Ashley Victoria Robinson. Oh, it was last year when that set came out. It's the, I've got it here as well. It's the Alice in Wonderland tarot deck. I know, right? It seems weird, but it works. The biggest problem that I have with the Alice in Wonderland tarot deck is the back of the card has all of these teapots in the design. And so as you're laying the card out, you can tell which cards are upside down or reversed and which ones aren't. And so depending on how you want to fool yourself or con yourself, you can flip the card over a certain way to where it's reversed or not reversed, right? Because you can see from the back of the deck that which way the card is up. They fix that in the Buffy the Vampire Slayer tarot deck, where you can't tell whether the card is upright or upside down. And I like that a lot. So that is a good improvement over the previous deck. The one complaint that I have about this deck is I've been using this deck for about a week or so. I think they sent it a week and a half ago. I've been, you know, going through the cards, flipping through the cards, laying them out, flipping them over, those kinds of things. And for some reason, these cards, I don't know if it's the way the surface is done or if I just haven't worked the cards enough, but these cards tend to clump up. It's kind of hard when you're shuffling the deck to pull out like just two cards. It seems like I'm pulling out every 10 cards seem to clump together for whatever reason. I think it's the friction of the deck, or it's not, you know, it's not been lubricated or anything like that. It's a very matte, flat design that is not super conducive to, I think, this design. But the Alice in Wonderland tarot deck set that they sent previously doesn't have that problem. And I can shuffle through this deck and rifle through this deck and spread it out without ever running into that. So I don't know what that is, but that is probably my biggest complaint. Of course, you're not supposed to shuffle the tarot deck like you do a set of cards. So that isn't a problem with the deck being a little clumpy. But even if you are to spread them all out and kind of throw them in a pile on your table and smear them around, that can still also cause some clumpiness in there as well. But as far as the tarot deck goes, if you are a fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, if you are someone that just wants to collect tarot card decks, and I know that there are several of our listeners out there that do that, then this might be something to add into your collection. It's certainly a unique talking point, right? Because you always think of the, and I have a copy of it here. I can't reach it now. But your traditional tarot card set that you see in every television and movie show, there are those decks that are out there that people think about. So being able to see an Alice in Wonderland tarot card set or a Buffy the Vampire Slayer tarot card set is something that's definitely going to get some people talking. And so if you're into one of those two categories, I think picking up this Buffy set is going to be very interesting. Again, the art is beautiful in this. If you follow the Major Spoilers Instagram, I posted some of the images of the cards for you to check out. over there. And so this is a pretty cool set. The biggest thing is the clumping of the cards. I don't know what I can do about that. I'm going to give the Buffy, the Vampire Slayer tarot deck, if you want to buy it, $27.99. You're going to give it 4 out of 5 slices of the old meatloaf there. So cool. There you go. Have you ever played with a tarot card deck, Matthew?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They're pretty cool. I've got
another. I can tell you your future. I will divine for you. Yeah. And I did it actually at one point with a girl who was very mad at me. Because she was very, very much a believer. And for some reason, the things that were coming up for me, she was like, how? So, yeah.
Well, and so it's all in your interpretation of the cards. And certainly the little deck books that come with the Buffy or the Alice in Wonderland, or really with any tarot deck set, will say, hey, here's what we think that you should read into this. But really, people look at like something like the Tower and they're like, oh, this is a scary card. This portends doom. And it's it just says that change could be coming depending on how you're interpreting that. And that's one of the interesting things about the Alice in Wonderland set, is because it is a Disney Alice in Wonderland set. You can't go in and just do the Tower and like the sky is falling and you're going to be dead soon. No, they really approach it as just use the Tower as a sign of change. In this thing. So I like that a lot. I've got a couple of other tarot sets that I really like that are Art Nouveau in their art. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, I like these, not because I'm sitting here trying to say, predict the future of Major Spoilers or, My Money Troubles or, Love Life or anything like that. It's just like the art on all of these decks that I have, including this Buffy the Vampire Slayer one, are just phenomenal. And the fact that you're getting, 57 or 74? I forget what the card count is. Oh, I'm sorry, 78 cards in this. The fact that you're getting 78 cards of art is amazing. So look at it for the art, play it for fun. If you want to deep dive into this and say it's all real, great. I'm not going to hold that against you. But use it for entertainment purposes. Kind of like a Ouija board.
I feel like, after the second child, she probably loves you. So questions of your love life.
Oh, no, I'm just saying, that's what a lot of people are like. Tell me about my future and my finances. These are all the things that people go to your fortune tellers to find out about. So there you go. That is something that is not quite comic books, but it's definitely pop culture adjacent because of my love of all things Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Well, maybe not the creator, but my love of
Charisma
all things
Carpenter,
and also Charisma Carpenter. Yes. So yeah, there you go with that. Hey, but there's a new Star Trek book out this week, Matthew. Why don't we talk about that since we talked a lot about Star Wars in segment one?
Yeah, this is Star Trek. This is a trek through the stars. And this is actually one that I covered issue one a few weeks ago. Either 3 or 4 generally is how a comic book works. But Star Trek Defiant, number 2, is out, written by Christopher Cantwell, art by Angel Unzueta. And it picks up right where we left off last issue. Worf, who is now a captain, has stolen the USS Defiant with the help of his first officer, one Spock of Vulcan. And has assembled a crew, including Ro Laren, a former Maquis, and Ilana Torres, a different former Maquis. And they are now out in space trying to stop the end of everything. There is a Klingon sect known as the Red Path, one of whom is actually Worf's son, Alexander Rozhenko.
This he's a rogue? He's gone rogue?
Yes, they're working for Kales.
Oh, no, not Kales.
The clone of Kales, no less.
The clone of Kales? The leader of the Klingons?
Yes, the clone of Kales.
And people don't think I know my Star Trek.
Yeah, you don't. But
hey, there's the samurai and the robot and the thing and the thing. Hey, I know Star Trek.
How dare you? How very dare you? Anyway, this issue involves them going out into space and finding that somehow the Red Path is working with a crystalline entity. Uh-oh. You may remember the crystalline entity. Yes. And you know what happens when you got a crystalline entity?
Yeah. You turn into a crystal.
You gotta have a positronic brain.
Yeah, you do.
Even Spock admits that the computations necessary to outthink a crystal entity and figure out where it's going are beyond his Vulcan brain. So, ninja mission.
Uh-oh, ninja missions.
Spock and Worf put on their ninja mission suits.
Okay.
And Spock literally puts on the I think it's the headband that he wore in Star Trek
four.
And they go on a ninja mission and they break into Section 31 and they find the body of Lore.
Oh, no, not Lore. Data's daughter.
No, that's Lol.
Oh,
Lore is Data's evil brother.
Evil brother. Stop naming everybody L's.
Yeah, you're getting there. There's Data and there's Lore and then there's, I think, Instinct.
Lieutenant Worf and Lieutenant Geordi.
Really?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. If you've been watching season 3 of Star Trek Picard, first of all, congratulations. You watched 2 seasons of something that wasn't Star Trek, only to get suckered into the last season of Star Trek The Next Generation, a completely traditional Star Trek tale. Ha ha! And secondly, there are parallels between that story and this story. And some of them are remarkable, which makes me think that somebody at IDW maybe needed to go and check. Now, again, IDW comics are a separate reality. It's a different, continent.
Yes, but they also have to get approval from Paramount everything. So it wouldn't surprise me if there is some kind of a tie to some greater Star Trek stuff.
It's entirely possible because Picard takes place a good 20 to 25 years after this story. But this story also features the green Orion pirates. You remember the pirates from Orion?
I do. Not Spock, but Kirk made out with one of them, slave girls.
yes, those are the girls. The men are pirates.
Yeah, so this is the one where Worf gets to make out with one of the pirates.
Nobody makes out with the pirates.
And what good is an Orion if you can't make out with them?
Everybody on this ship is either married or like some sort of weird ascetic monk person.
It's one of those.
There's some dealing and there's some flumping and wumping. And then the coming next month features Spock sitting in the command chair as the ship explodes around him. So that bodes well.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see, obviously, as you said, these all take place in a different reality than the main Star Wars television show. But there is another Star Trek book out this week where Data is confronting the God City. And I wonder if these are two stories that are running in parallel with one another, because how can Data be in two places at once?
Well, Data and Lore are not the same person.
No, but I mean, I thought you said that Data was in here and they discover Lore in this.
Lore is in here.
Oh, okay.
They actually go in, they break in, they find a robot. If I said Data, I misspoke.
Okay.
So they found Lore, a disassembled Lore.
Okay.
And they're running around
and
they're
doing this thing and they're kicking.
Right. And that's why I said Lore, because otherwise I was going to be like, ooh, sneaky. Now he's on the cover.
Yeah.
He's on the freaking cover. I think the most fascinating part of this is there are a couple of pages where we actually get data pad scenes that are literal Okudagrams. So you have like the big swirly bits and the points and all the funny colors. And then you do get, Starfleet communiques about the Orion pirates. You get one about the sale of trilithium for weapons use. Mm. Last issue, they had one about the theft of the Starship Defiant. Those are neat. I really do like those. And Cantwell does really well at doing like groups of people who hate each other forced to work together. His recent run on Iron Man actually had a group that Iron Man just called his space friends, but it was like a group of characters that he had pulled together. So like the Gargoyle from the Defenders and Ben Reilly, the Scarlet Spider, and Frogman.
Yeah. Frogman.
And like five people in Hellcat are all pulled together and they have to work together. And it feels very much like that, with the main difference being the real selling point here is watching Worf interact with Spock.
Yeah. And question. This isn't like Fumetti. Yeah. This isn't Fumetti nonsense, is it?
It is not Fumetti nonsense. It is well drawn. Unzueta does really good action sequences, like, the ninja-fied action sequences feel ninja-fied. There is a little bit of stiffness in the figure work, but it's not like, we're drawing from Frozen references like you get in the really, really old Star Trek stuff. I mean, B'Elanna is always B'Elanna, Ro is Ro. It's very clearly Leonard Nimoy's Spock. It's not like a Zachary Quinto or whoever they have on Brave New Worlds. It is definitely Nimoy in his 70s as Spock.
Cool.
So, you know, I'm actually fine with this. 3.5 slices of meatloaf. I'm liking the parts that are working, and the parts that bug me aren't like broken yet. They're just things that I hope they get to soon, if that makes sense.
There you go. There you go. Dear listeners, if you want to pick up either of these things that we've talked about, we have a link in the show notes to take you to our Amazon affiliate page. It is an affiliate page, but if you decide to buy the Buffy the Vampire Slayer tarot deck or the Star Trek Defiant number 2 in Kindle form, then a little bit comes back our way, and that helps keep Major Spoilers going. And I know what you're thinking, Stephen, I am concerned about helping you guys out, but I want to make sure that I'm doing it the right way. And certainly I could say, well, you definitely want to check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/majorspoilers, because going there, when you become like even a $5 a month subscriber, $5 a month unlocks hundreds of hours of bonus content, literally hundreds of hours. Maybe it may be close to 900 hours of bonus content at this point, maybe a little bit longer. You have access to all of that instantly when you become a Patreon member. You don't believe me? Take it from the Buffy the Tarot deck. Matthew, concentrate on whether people should sign up to be a patron. And I will I will take this top card and I will flip it over. And we get, what's Wolf Boy's name?
Oz.
Oz as the Sixth of Scythes. And it is upright.
Scythes.
Yes. No one asks for their life to change, but change it does. Oh, that's an indicator that you need to go and become a patron because of all the great things that are coming for you. You're not helpless or a puppet. Take it from the Slayer herself. Like Buffy, the Sixth of Scythes emboldens you to forge ahead, confident that you can handle whatever comes your way, like the hundreds of hours of bonus content you get when you become a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Ooh, ooh, don't resign yourself to being a victim like all the people who are not patrons and don't have access to a critical hit a week early when you sign up at the $5 level. Ooh, take ownership over what's next and shift your perspective to view it as an opportunity. Take it from the Buffy the Vampire Slayer tarot deck itself, listeners. If you are not already a patron, if this isn't a sign that you should become a patron today, then my goodness, thank goodness this wasn't a bad card. This is actually a sign of opportunity to take charge and become part of the Patreon family today. Come and join us, patreon.com/majorspoilers.
It's a rite of passage.
It is a rite of passage. Or if you'd like to get your name, that's the other bonus too, right? You get your name shouted out in this very show when you sign up. Doesn't matter what level you sign up for, we shout your name out right here in this show. And depending on your pleasure level, you may become an NPC in our critical hit game that's currently going on. Octoon Cthulhu, fighting Cthulian monsters and Nazis at the same time, punching them in the face. Oh, it feels so good. Go check that out, criticalhit.com, or not criticalhitpod.com, but the Critical Hit Podcast over at majorspoilers.com.
Ooh,
yeah. All right, we're into the third act of our show right now, as we're going act to talk three. This week about the Teenage Mutant Ninja
this
Turtles.
This is where we reveal the murderer.
Yes, and it was Matthew all along with the Sixth of Scythes. TMNT, The Last Ronin from Kevin Eastman, Peter Laird, Tom Waltz, with art by, I'm guessing, Yusha and Isaac Escozara and Ben Bishop. And so it has been a long time since I read original Eastman and Laird comics. I was still in high school when I think they left that series, right? Because wasn't it like right around the same time that the cartoon show came about? And they're like, yeah, we're going to not do this anymore because you guys are changing our original vision.
The Mirage book, I think, ended in the 90s, but it was early in the 90s. So
So I may be thinking of that same time period.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that series, quote unquote, ended. Did it end with some post-apocalyptic vision of the future for the turtles?
Sort of. The thing that was weird about it is there are actually different versions of what you run into near the end of that book. So this is a future. One of the, if I'm remember correctly, this is one of the possible futures.
Yeah, these were all cobbled together from notes that they had done or an idea that they had way right. back when the original series was, quote unquote, ending.
Mm-hmm. So that Mirage series and a number of things were left up in the air in that Mirage series. But when Image came back, they were like, we're going to pick up those pieces. And they're like, no, that didn't work. So all of that has been disavowed. Mm-hmm. And now we're back. Hey, we're going to go and we're going to look and see how this all ended. And you're like, okay, wait, what?
Well, I think that's fine, especially when you consider that you have the Eastman and Laird Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Then you have a thing that came after Eastman and Laird, which I think they were still somewhat involved in, but was more reflective of the television and media of the time. And right. now you kind of get a cross between those two and what IDW has been doing the last couple of years with their Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle series. So working this back in and making this a big Eastman and Laird comeback and getting back to that original Mirage series feels like a, you know, softball toss to Babe Ruth kind of thing. And of course, obviously the sales were through the roof on this thing. Issue number two of The Last Ronin outsold any book IDW has ever published. That's how popular Makes this sense. Was. Rob, when he heard about The Last Ronin series, was just like gushing. He was like, oh my God, I cannot wait to get my hands on this thing. So many people excited about The Last Ronin. And really, the first issue has, you know, this mysterious mutant Ninja Turtle coming back into the city of New York that has been walled off. This is obviously sometime in the future. And he's, you know, he's got his cloak on and he's trying to sneak around. But three other Ninja Turtles are with him and they're talking to him. And they're not certainly in their in the same garb that he is. And it's very much Shang-Chi, you know, climbing up the tower to fight the evil overlord that's controlling the city. One of not Kang, but Shredder's descendants. And then we
Shredder's
find out
grandson. Yeah.
Yes. Shredder's grandson. And then we find out that all of the other Ninja Turtles are dead. And the only living Ninja Turtle, the Last Ronin, is Mikey, Michelangelo, who is on this quest to bring down and end this family feud once and for all.
Which is pretty remarkable, given that Mikey is always sort of portrayed as the young one and the bright, young, shiny one. And then, oh my gosh, because I was going through this at the beginning, I'm like, that's
very
Raph.
Flat. Yeah. Everybody thinks it's Raphael Raph. Because he's the one that is the loner, right? He's the one that runs right. off and does his own thing. He had his own arc in the Laird run where he did split up and did his own thing. And that's where he meets Casey Jones and all of that stuff. And so, yeah, you really think that in the color and the art that they use in this is very flat. It's a I wouldn't say it's monochrome, but it is a limited color palette.
Very muted.
It's browns and reds and blacks. And so, yeah, you're thinking Raphael the entire time until you get to that point where he's laying out all of the weapons and all of their bandanas. And you're like, oh, no, this is Mikey. Oh, this really changes the nature of what this story is about. Or at least for me, it changed that.
Oh, I definitely agree. Because to have that Michelangelo character, that character who to a lot of people will always be the party dude, and have him be this old, bitter Ronin who's lost everything, lost his family, lost his clan, lost, you know, Splinter, and have him wandering through this weird dystopian hellscape, it is neat. It is really, you know, it has elements that remind me of things like, you know, you get your Blade Runner, you get a little bit of your Akira here and there. There's a lot of moments in here, like the Fugitoid, of course.
Oh, yeah, the Fugitoid is back, ladies and gentlemen. We get to find out what happens to Casey Jones in April. Casey Jones is dead. April is alive and had a daughter, and she's a mutant. Not in the fact that she's a rhinoceros with a giant elephant trunk or anything like that. She's a normal looking girl, but she has amazing healing powers and she is super strong. And the thought is that because April and Casey spent too much time around mutagenic creatures, that somehow they were also, quote unquote, infected. And so they pass that along to her. So we got the daughter of Casey and April helping out Mikey. And then, of course, we get to see the Mauser's creator is still around.
Baxter Stockman.
Yeah, Baxter Stockman. That's crazy as heck. And then the Fugitoid plays a big role in this as well. At the end of the book, as they're trying to take down Shredder's grandson and end things once and for all. And I just found it very well put together.
Yeah, it is really cool. And I feel like if you think to yourself, hey, how can I, if I loved the cartoon, how can I look at this and say this is cool? You still can. I mean, it's especially powerful if you think about wacky cartoon Michelangelo.
The early 90s cartoon.
Yeah, and you put him in the context of now he's this crazy old man.
Yeah, this crusty, bitter old man Logan type.
Scarred, wonderful stuff. And then, you know, you kind of almost have the Dark Knight Returns moments here, except instead of having it been Batman, it was a cool turtle in an orange mask. I feel like the only possible downside for me was, if I recall correctly, the first issue had like 73
something like that variant covers. Like
just a ridiculous number of variant covers because they knew people were psyched to see this, and I kind of feel like I don't need people to hasten the next market collapse is the way.
Well,
I feel
so this isn't the first one that has done that. I mean, anytime there's
Walking
a big event,
Dead did that. There's all sorts of crazy.
Yeah. And a lot of these too, if I remember correctly, were not just, one in a million variant or like that. They were store variants. So store variants are ones where a publisher or a comic book store can pay $5,000 or whatever. And a cover is done with that store's logo on it, so that you can sell it in your store. I think if I remember, that's what what most of those were. Cause if they had like a one in a million variant on that, that'd be ridiculous.
74,000, variant covers. Every issue has its own unique cover. I don't need that. Nobody needs that. Stop it.
Well, I would just go with the main covers cause I think they're very iconic. From that standpoint, obviously, I wouldn't suggest you go out and find the individual issues. I would just go out and get the trade. There's a hardback volume of this that's really nicely bound and well done that I think includes a section, or at least the electronic review copy that we have has many of the variant covers in there, which are fun to flip through. So that's nice. So maybe just get the Kindle version if you don't want to take up space on your shelves. But I really enjoyed this story more than I thought I would. I don't know what I was expecting, because it had been 20 years since I've read. I've read some of the current IDW stuff, and we've done some of the crossover, Power Rangers, TMNT, Batman, TMNT type stuff. And those are fine. But I haven't been reading the main IDW Turtles storyline, nor have read anything between the end of the Mirage comics and today. So jumping back into this felt very interesting and good, and I think very satisfying for me as an old person who read those original comics all those years ago.
Yes, and that I think may be partly a function of age, but
probably
it's not just a nostalgia factor either. I feel like certain types of stories lend themselves to having an ending. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles started out as, a parody of what was hot in comics in 1984.
Right.
Nobody remembers Frank Miller's Ronin, which the beginning of it is a direct parody of. But you get to a point where that becomes in itself almost like an institution. Spider-Man will go on forever. The Turtles will go on forever. Scooby-Doo will go on forever. But having the Mirage version of these characters who were more realistic, who were more just some ninjas who happened to have turtle shells on their back, having them get an ending, and 25, 30 years down the line, most of them are dead. The last one has to deal with this very iconic old school samurai movie story arc. I love it. I feel like that is absolutely perfect for what those stories were, even if the following stories weren't so much.
What did you think about the way the story is told? The story is told both in modern times or the present of the story taking place, as well as flashing back to this is what happened before.
I liked the way the flashbacks emulated Eastman.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Art. Black and white. Yeah, yeah.
I liked that part, but I felt like the gulf between that Eastman Laird flashback art and what we saw, you know, even in the stuff that was just a little flashback when we saw, you know, Casey's death.
Right.
When we see those moments, it feels like a completely different universe. It feels like it's hard for me to take those two styles and say this is all something that happened in the same world.
But yeah, and I don't know how
on the other hand,
I don't know how the art duties were divided up. If one person handled the flashbacks and the Esquizara's handled, you know, the main art, I didn't look into that much.
Yeah. But I also feel like that's also kind of appropriate for the Turtles, because I mean, the Turtles, if, even if you just go and read those first 30, 35 issues of that Mirage series, they go a lot of different places, and there's not really any type of big story arc or overarching thing. It's just sort of a, hey, let's go have some crazy adventures. And then things start snowballing up behind them. So I'm like, I'm fine with that too. I like the expectation that your life changes you. And so if you think, hey, he's really young, he's in black and white. And now he's an old man and he's all weirdly green. You know, life has more colors when you're young, but it has fewer colors as you get old. Yep. But when you're a tiny baby, it's black and white.
Yeah. So some interesting things about this, popular enough that there is a video game based on The Last Ronin that's coming out. That should be very interesting to check out when it does. And there is also a sequel to The Last Ronin. I forget the exact title, but it serves as both a sequel and a prequel to The Last Ronin, because, again, it's also employing flashbacks to take you back to some of those black and white moments that are in this book to flesh them out a little bit more. What was Mikey actually doing all these years between him, you know, running away to Japan and then coming back to New York? And then the present day story is following the big surprise at the end where April's daughter, and I forget what her name is raising
Casey.
Yeah, Casey. That's right. Because when they first say it, they think it's Casey Jones. And it's like, nope, it's my daughter, Casey. Different spelling,
Casey,
same
Marie.
Sound. Yeah. She is raising four young turtles in the sewers. And apparently they're going to be exposed to mutagens, too, because she will then become their splinter and train them in the ways of all the
stuff. She's going to mutate them, and then she's going to torture a whole.
Yeah, I've seen, if you've seen the art, that series came out this year, 2023. And the turtles are very different. They're kind of the way that the IDW series has portrayed some of the other mutated animals, like Raphael is this big, hulking, snapping turtle type character. So that's how they're going to be very different than in this follow-up series than they have been conceived of or portrayed in the past. So
I do like the, you know, the silly details. Like in the last couple of pages, you see Casey wearing that little yellow shirt with the five. That's the part of the costume design from the last animated series. The 2012 animated series. That's what April wore. So it's like a hand-me-down from when her mom hung out with the turtles. And, you know, there's a lot of that. There's one point in the story where Eastman and Laird are by the side of the street. And they're like, hey, did you see that? Was that a turtle?
Oh, was that?
I'm like, okay. Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, in jokes and moments. But again, for me, the success of the story is, do you need those? And you don't. This story will work even if you don't get those. And it does. You know, we said it very early, but it starts with a mystery, you know, of who's behind this hood? Who is it? And when we finally do get to the point where you're like, oh, yeah, the final, you know, member of the Oroku clan. Yeah, he's going to kill him. It's terrible.
Good. It's good stuff. So it bottom line for me is I really enjoyed this book a lot more than I thought I was going to. And I think that because it's one of those Days of Future Past, in the future, maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't happen kind of stories. I think this works whether you're a current Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan from either the TV shows or the video games or whatever IDW is publishing right now in their current storyline, or if you're an old school Turtles fan, I think this reads well as kind of a what if, Dark Knight Returns type story. And so I really do give it big thumbs up. I really think that this is something you should go check out. I mentioned the hardbound edition that you can get, but whether you get the paperback or the Kindle version, that's fine too. I think that this is something that anybody who is a Turtles fan should pick up and read if you haven't read it already.
Oh, yeah. This is good comics. And that is not something that you can always say about everything that comes out any given month. You know, especially in the modern era, there are a lot of books where you're like, what are we giving you? This is something that it's just like something that Iron Man did in the 90s, except things are different now. Okay, that's fine. You know, it's not a bad comic. It's somebody's first comic. But this really feels like an event comic that kind of earned its event status.
Yeah, very much so.
Where you're like, hey, this really is something wild and different. And by the end, you know, when terrible things happen, I'm not saying he dies, but maybe he dies. I don't know.
I think we already gave that part away. But
oh, man. You know,
so you do say pick it up, read it, buy it.
Oh, absolutely. I say pick it up, especially if you're a fan.
Yeah.
More importantly, if you know who Venus de Milo is, she's not in this.
No, no. Neither are Cowboy or Bebop and Rocksteady. They're not in here either. So
they should be.
And I was really thinking that there would have been something with Kang, but maybe that's in the next book. I think really, though, if you're thinking about those first 35 issues, you really are. Baxter Stockman was kind of the big bad guy. The Mausers were kind of the big menace that was always threatening them. I think that when you're
if you know the video game and only the video game, this also works as a sequel. Oh yeah,
it does. It really does. There you go. All right. That wraps it up for this issue. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out. If you found any value in this show, we would love for you. Seriously, we would love for you to join us on our Patreon page, where you can find even more fun, including all of that bonus content and the Major Spoilers Podcast pre-show, where we talk about some TV shows that we have seen, as well as some books we're reading and those kinds of things. Find it over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Again, patreon.com/majorspoilers. Don't disappoint Oz. Don't disappoint our Sixth Size. And go over there and sign up and join us today. So until next time, remember, we know that you love comics and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Fat Dick's Ray Vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. If I'm Star Raven, it's like a man of iron. Might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being in the Middle East with a King Santo and soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2023 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.